And now it is Dr. Sonja Peková. She's a Czech clinical biochemist and molecular geneticist. And she's also a member of the New Parallel Medical Association. Very interesting. A New Parallel Medical Association. Dr. Peková, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Excellently, yeah. My name is Sonja Peková, but I'm not a biochemist. I am molecular biologist and molecular microbiologist. So this is my specialty. Though I studied human medicine, but then I went straight for it into the laboratory. And since then, it has been for 20 years I'm in the lab.
Uh-huh. So what's going on in the Czech Republic? Are you really about, or have you already created, a new parallel medical association?
So first of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you, because I really appreciate all your work you had done, you and your team. That's really invaluable.
We couldn't do it without you.
So as far as the parallel medical chamber goes, it started in autumn 2021. And it was established as an opinion platform. So I have a couple of notes, and I also have a presentation, PowerPoint presentation, because I'd like to show you some data, some laboratory data I would love you to see and think about that. So maybe we could start with the presentation. So is that a possibility?
Sure.
So I'll share screen. It's here. So can I see it?
Yes.
Do you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Parallel Medical Chamber started in autumn 2021. And the reason was that we needed an opinion platform. So it's an opinion platform of regular members of the Czech Medical Chamber. And it was built for intelligent communication among doctors, because at that time there was really any. There was none. It is for medical practitioners and the government, and for a productive dialogue and for finding effective solutions and treatment strategies while preserving good moral, good doctor-patient relationships and all the fundamentals of evidence-based medicine, because we missed all these really thoroughly, really, really deeply. So all the members of the Parallel Medical Chamber are actively practicing clinical doctors in real contact with the patients, so they saw the situation and they could feel the situation. The aim of the PMC, it's abbreviation for the Parallel Medical Chamber, is to balance biased and often incorrect information, maybe called misinformation, from the Ministry of Health and the Czech Medical Chamber. And the Czech Medical Chamber is the official body, and the Parallel Medical Chamber is a like sub body. We are still members of the Czech Medical Chamber because it's compulsory, but we started this new platform because the Czech Medical Chamber totally failed. The PMC offers first line medical advice and help for general practitioners and patients. And really, we are substituting the role of the Czech Medical Chambers. We provide our doctors and patients and all interested individuals with uncensored medical information from foreign sources, and the information is regularly updated and everything is made available to the public. We organize lectures, meetings, conferences for medical society, media, and interested individuals on controversial topics regarding COVID-19, and also on better health system management, because it's so mismanaged right now. We also provide people with updated information on anti-COVID-19 so-called vaccine and on the safety of this experimental solution. And unfortunately, we need to use mostly foreign databases and foreign security sources, because although we have a beautiful database in our country, which has been running for years, for decades, now everything is censored. You are not able to get any information from our own national register. And even senators ask for some information, and the question was rejected, which is unseen, unheard. Czech Medical Chamber and the government and mainstream propagandistic media, so they try their best to censor, ridicule, deplatform, ostracize, dehonest, and even criminalize the members and the activities of the paramedical chamber, but to no avail. And I'd say that since we started, and I personally started in March 2020, and I do not know if you had a chance to look eastward, but I was that one who shouted aloud that the virus looks like artificial and not naturally occurring. And it was in March 2020. And I have a few slides here with me to show you why I was so convinced, and still I'm convinced, that it was not of natural origin. Everything was, of course, suppressed, the truth obfuscated, totally, but I think that the future will show us. And to forget, I think the parallel medical chamber is extremely important because despite all the suppression we experience from our government and Czech medical chamber and so-called experts in our propagandistic state media, still I think we were able to deliver important information to many clinical doctors, to many ordinary individuals, ordinary Joes, the public, and we saved quite a few of lives, I'd like to say, because we started. So our idea is it was to educate people, and once the people are educated, then whatever information or misinformation comes from the government, just they are able to regard it in terms of the new knowledge and their previous knowledge. So we decided to damage a COVID-19 false construct of our government just by disassembling, dissipating the form, the structure. And it's done by educating people. And in molecular biology, we use a term like bottom-up approach. So this is our bottom-up approach, that we educate people, educate the first line, contact doctors and all these individuals, and of course doctors in faculty hospitals and stuff, but we disintegrate the whole structure of lies which was created by our government, and it just duplicates. Each state duplicates the same, like a copy-paste in each country, the same. Sometimes it's stricter, sometimes it's less strict, but it's just the same, exactly as Johnny said, so the same narrative produced by someone and the government replicated. So you decided to destroy the construction just by educating people, and if you educate people, then they lose the target, because once the people know what's going on and understand the lies, they'll not go for any further booster shot, and they'll try ignoring all these social distancings and mandatory facial masks and stuff. So we decided to damage the structure from the bottom up. So this is what we do with the parallel medical chamber, in brief.
Very good. Very good. Everyone should do this. All of the there should be more parallel chambers, and I think we're going to hear more about this as far as the judicial front is concerned from our guest Anna Garner from New Mexico. I was surprised to hear that this is really happening already and that people are not just talking about it. I'm impressed. Very good.
So it requires kind of bribe, insolence, or I don't know, but once. For example, I personally, once I understood what's going on, so for me it was like an order. You need to educate people because this is not normal, and all the government is trying to convey is just lie. And if I might, I'd continue with my presentation with some, because I'm the laboratory mouse, and this is my world. And a few weeks ago or days ago, I don't remember exactly, we had a conference, and it was international conference, Czech and Slovak, because we speak basically the same language, so it was easy. And it was this kind of underground conference because it was outside of the mainstream media, and we tried to deliver the complex knowledge from the laboratory point of view, like scientists, then general practitioners, then people in lawyers and all these people just acting against the government and all these restrictions and stuff. Well, it's here, so it was really useful, and I think also the English version is available. So I'd like to show you some of the data I presented there, mm-hmm. and for your consideration. And I'm really happy that I might do that here on this platform. So I would start with this picture. So it's from January 2022, and definitely you have seen it. So all these dots. Can you see my mouse?
No, unfortunately not. We still see the first slide.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So what shall I do?
I think what you do is double click on the slide that you want to show us.
So I did. I sent the presentation to
Corvin.
Yes, so maybe he could launch it from your side.
I'll ask him. Hang on. Corvin, do we have some advice here for Dr. Pekova?
Because I normally see the second slide, so I do not know what's wrong. Even if I double click, it only goes forward. But
and maybe if you just reload the share screen, or if you close it and then
do this again. Who knows? I'll do that. Uh-huh.
Sometimes it gets stuck.
So if we don't manage it, so I'll need to explain in the lyrical and epical terms what we have found in the lab. So how it is? Is it better?
No, we only see your, your file list, a list of files.
Yeah.
Never mind. So maybe just let me speak, and if anything is not understandable, just stop me and ask. Okay.
Yeah.
So the first slide shows the map of from GIS-8. So this is the database of all sequenced genomes of SARS-CoV-2, and you can see the map, how it started and how it spread, and all these branches with different substrates and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And my work is. Oh, now it got so. Excuse me, just once more, because it got stuck somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
My work is I'm molecular microbiologist and molecular biologist and geneticist, and my job since 2006 is to produce and design assays for molecular microbiology, meaning for PCR tests. And since 2006, we started with human field, and we really pioneered it in this country. And then in 2014, we added also veterinary field. And we have, I think, the largest portfolio of like hundreds of different tests for different pathogens using PCR techniques. All of the absolute majority of them are like mine design. So this is what I do. And in the veterinary and also in the medical field, we had never seen. Oh, it got stuck. Oh, I'm sorry. So maybe
take your time. Don't worry about this.
I don't know what to do now.
Okay. I just got a piece of advice. We will do it ourselves. So we will show the entire presentation from here.
Lovely.
I think this is possible.
Yeah, that's excellent.
And then it'll be easier. So here you go. I don't know if you can see the picture, but that is probably the second slide that you were going to show.
Okay, so this is the title of the talk I had at the conference, of the Czech Slovak conference on COVID-19. And as I said, the participants were from the science, from medical doctors, practitioners, lawyers, and so on. And I'd like to show you something from our lab. So the second, if I may ask for the second one. Okay, so this is the map. Probably you have seen it many times, and it shows the many different strains of SARS-CoV-2, and it's a snapshot from GIS-AID, which is a database that it's like international database. And if you when you sequence SARS-CoV-2, you just uploaded the sequence there, and they produce all these branches, how it develops, and so on. And you also can see the countries and the pie charts, and it looks like firecrackers on New Year's Eve. And as I said, so my field is veterinary and human molecular microbiology, and I'm the developer, the designer of tests for real-time PCR for hundreds of different pathogens. And to see something like this, that we have an agent which is so variable and changes so much under our own hands and in front of our eyes, we never seen it before. So it doesn't have any precedence. So this was the first clue that something weird is going on. Next slide, please. So in March 2020, when the red dot from Wuhan started spreading around the world, so it was just a task for our lab to look at that and create a PCR assay for the virus, because our expertise is veterinary and the human molecular microbiology. So I used the genome, which was just uploaded recently at that time, a genome of SARS-CoV-2, and studied the genome. And at the, and I was looking for the best portion of the virus to be used as a target for specific and sensitive real-time PCR. At the same time, there came recommendations by CDC and WHO saying that the only possible PCR test is the is the so-called Drosten test targeting three genes S, N, and E. And I studied this design, and because, as I said, I have been in the field and I'm the designer of really hundreds of designs for molecular microbiology. So I studied Drosten's design and thought to me that it looked like illogical and even dangerous. So this design, I completely refused it and redesigned it in a new way. And I found a specific portion of the SARS-CoV-2 genome at the very 5' end. So SARS-CoV-2 has a linear genome consisting of some 30,000 letters, bases, and left side is 5' end, and the downstream right side is the 3' end. So I found in the 5' end, the most left part of the genome, the beginning of the genome, I found something really interesting, because I found a sequence which is so unique for this virus that no other species in the world harbors this sequence. And when I slept on that the next morning, I thought, oh, Jesus, it's so unusual. So how it's possible, if you compare and align genomes of the individual bat coronaviruses, because at that time they said it came from the bat, how it is possible if you align the sequences and you see the 5' UTR, which is the control center of the virus, because there reside sequences for both the replication and transcription. So how it is possible that you could see some jump-like difference from the closest neighbor, and the closest neighbor was SARS, the SARS from 2003. So at that point, it crossed my mind that it probably is not of natural origin and not from the bats, because there is no logical and possible plausible explanation how this promoter region, this control center, could undergo such a huge... Oh, those noses make my Great Dane. I have a dog here with me, so sorry for the noises. He's on the sofa. So I found this really part, a really interesting part of the genome. And to me, it's impossible to evolve in nature, because if it evolved in nature, you would see some predecessors of the final sequence. And now we have a sequence which has 27 nucleotide difference from the closest neighbor, which is SARS. And if the virus changes even one nucleotide here, it's a very careful iteration, tries what kind of activities it will give it, because some changes might even kill it. So it's impossible to do it like jump like from something to make some 27 nucleotide changes totally random, and it would be perfectly fit and overflow the world. So it seemed to me at that point that SARS-CoV-2 most likely harbors a very strong promoter. And at that time, back in March 2020, I tried to write down and submit a short letter, a brief report to a journal saying that a 5' UTR SARS-CoV-2 seems to be genetically unique, and there are some implications for improved molecular diagnostics, meaning not the Drosten design, but go for 5' UTR because you will be specific. But it was rejected as too explosive. So at that time, I was just surprised, because for me, it was, I thought it was some inadvertent lab leak, and it didn't cross my mind. It might be something more behind it. And based on those predictions by mine from March 2020, based on 5' UTR features, I said, look, guys, so this virus very likely has a very strong promoter, meaning it will, the mutation rate of the virus will be extreme. We might encounter many strains. And if you have such a heterogeneous target, development of a vaccine against such a variable target is impossible. It's irrelevant. And I thought that people will say, oh, that's interesting, Sonia. So let's follow your idea. And instead of doing some precautionary measures and check laboratories try to look for the source, they started coming after me, which was quite interesting. Another important point is that 5' UTR SARS-CoV-2 is absolutely stable, no change since March 22 till this time. And we have many different strains of alpha, beta, delta, now we have Omicron. And in the red, I highlighted the Drosten triple target PCR assay. And here's my idea. When I saw his design in March 2020, and I just discarded it like useless, because never you use three targets for one pathogen. All the time you find one specific region in the genome and target just one specific region of the genome, and still you have SOP for sensitivity, specificity, variability, blah, blah, blah. There is ISO for the whole procedure. So I couldn't comprehend why he decided to go for three different targets for one species, for one agent. And also, when I looked at the design, it looked so dangerous, because the fragments were very, very short. It looked like no one would do it this way. But at present, knowing that right now we have Omicron and we had Alpha, Beta, blah, blah, blah. So it seems to me that Mr. Drosten might have known something more than the original, than some regular Joe the public. If he knew that the virus might change his genome so much, as it really does, and it's true because we see so many genotypes. So this might be an explanation why he decided to go for three different targets, because evidently at the beginning was to produce positive cases, and to using fear-mongering of the population, just try to introduce an idea of pandemics and some deadly disease and so on. So using the Drosten design, you would produce numbers without any specific effort. And also, whatever strain might appear, you should not miss it. You should detect it. But we never used Drosten design because we started at the beginning, but it had such a huge background, and produce a positive individual was easy. Just to add PCR cycles, and you might have any number of positive individuals you wanted. So we decided to go for the 5' UTR. This assay doesn't have any background, it's specific, sensitive, and at the beginning we distributed the assay to hundreds of laboratories because I offered it for free for anyone who was interested. And many laboratories ask for that. And this picture in the bottom part shows the alignment of the original SARS virus from Wuhan and the present Omicron. So you can perfectly see the perfect 100% alignment, and the sequence, this control sequence, did not change. To the left, there are two pictures, slightly hazy, but they show the differences between the Wuhan 5' UTR and bat coronavirus, and Wuhan SARS-CoV-2 and bat SARS coronavirus.
So hold on 1 second, Sonia. Uh-huh. I think a couple of minutes ago you explained that you had come up with your own PCR test, but they did not want to accept that, but told you to accept the Corman-Drosten paper. Who was it? Who did that?
It was our government, and it was the Czech Institute of Health. So the Czech Institute of Health is a body organizing this whole pandemics, mm-hmm. and they simply insisted on the WHO design. But then we went for a quality control validation, and we went for international quality control validation. And once we had it for our 5' UTR assay, they did not have any objections because they could not have. Once you have this quality control and everything works, it's specific, sensitive, you got blind samples, and you needed to tell which sample contains SARS-CoV-2 and even at what quantity, and we perfectly passed that test. Mm-hmm. So it means that your assay is also suitable for routine diagnostics. So we continued with this assay, and so far we tested almost 30,000 samples. So we have some idea about what's going on mm-hmm. right now. So it was kind of a battle at the beginning because really it was just fun. It was so absurd at the beginning that it was funny. They tried to close my lab. They tried, I don't know, they negotiated everything. They dishonested me. So it was funny. So it never happened in what I remember. So even at that point, I just started smelling fish that I didn't know what was going on here. So if I offer it for free, an assay which is perfectly useful without any background, specific, sensitive, easy, so let's go for that and use it. And it was totally like everything was just opposite. What was functional was rejected. What was not functional was used. So
this Drosten assay, as the way you analyzed it, would that also have detected like other coronavirus types?
It's a possibility because the products which are produced using that assay are extremely short, and the shorter it is, the higher the chance that you might detect something which is related and not exactly SARS-CoV-2. But I also suspect some intermolecular inferences within the test, because it was full of primers, full of probes, everything very close to each other. So simply the design just by eye looked dangerous. It looked like, when I saw it for the first time, I would say, oh, this must have high backgrounds, because this is not the way to design specific PCR test for any pathogen. So it was quite surprising for me at that time. But right now, as I said, I might have an explanation for why he decided to go for three individual targets, because they needed numbers. They needed numbers throughout the whole pandemics to keep the people alert that something is going on all the time.
You know, so what, with a lot of primers, you mean these three primers or additional ones that you saw?
For each individual fragment, you need two primers and one probe. And for S, you have two primers and a probe. For N, you have two primers and a probe. For E, you have two primers and a probe. And then also you have control gene, two primers and a probe. And it's such a goulash. It's really a dangerous goulash to be specific. So this is also what you have seen. So, for example, in our country, during the summer 2020, we used this 5' UTR assay, and to see someone who was PCR positive was quite rare. It was calm, silent. But from
that's because you used your own test, right?
Because we used our test, which doesn't have any background.
Yeah.
So we could distinguish between really specific and truly specific and falsely specific. So we didn't have any false specificities. And during the summer, the faculty hospitals and so on used this Drosten design, and all the time reported some positivities, but with really homeopathic quantity, CT values like 37, 40, and so on. And then they decided, oh, probably something is wrong with that, and decided that we'll stop PCR at the cycle 35, and which is later, like 36, 37, will be like discarded like negative. Because they understood, probably, there are many falsely positive samples, falsely positive cases. But they duly reported it to the database, to the world database and national database. So they all the time they had numbers. So the Drosten design is simply something which caused a pandemics of numbers and not pandemics of really diseased
infections. It just created cases, but those were only test positive results. It didn't
Absolutely.
Have anything to do with infections, because infection means the virus enters the cells, starts to replicate, and then you have symptoms as well. That's why it never made any sense to do mass screening of perfectly healthy people who have no symptoms, right? Did you test any? You didn't test any symptomless people, did you?
So we are a private lab, and because of all the restrictions and traveling requirements and stuff, so we tested also the standard population from the street. So we have an idea what's going on, not so much in the hospitals, but in the normal population.
Yeah.
And in the normal population using a specific test, the virus was not present. So during the summer, it was just... It was holiday. It was virus holiday. So could we go to the next slide?
Hang on one second. Yeah, go ahead. But one more question. Did I understand you correctly that you said that when the government or those people who are in line with the government, when they started testing, they did it according to the Corman-Drosten protocol. And when they couldn't find any cases, they ramped up the number of cycles of amplifications? Is that what they did in order to create cases?
I think the situation for them was quite easy in this respect, because the Drosten design by its own produces many, many false positives.
Mm-hmm.
So the Czech Institute of Health then said, or authorized body said, so probably there is some problem with the specificity, because we see so many positive cases, and it's not probable. When we started with testing in this country, so many, many different laboratories started, not only hospital laboratories and laboratories used to the work with molecular microbiology. It's a special type of work. You need to have like physically separated laboratories, not to contaminate your premises with the PCR product and so on. And many laboratories were not used to this specific type of work. And what we found out, many laboratories just got contaminated and contaminated the pre-analytics so that it was even more easier to produce positive cases. And I remember one case. So it was a patient. We identified him like SARS-CoV positive and quantified also the quantity of the virus. We are the only lab in the Czech Republic able to quantify the load of the virus. And we nicely followed up. It was a Gaussian curve. The positivity started. It went up and then went down. And then the guy was negative. Then it was transferred to another hospital. And another hospital insisted on a PCR test because they said, we will not accept anyone who we do not know if it's positive or negative. So they carried out the test and the guy came up positive. And then I said, no, impossible. He was 14 days ago, but now he's negative. So you can accept him normally. And they, no, we can find a positivity. When we tried in the morning, it's CT32. When we tried in the evening, the same cycle, the CT value is 37. So totally discrepant results. So I asked for the product and the PCR product they produced from that allegedly produced from that patient, and we sequenced the product blindly using next generation sequencing, and we found out that it was not a specific product of SARS-CoV-2 from that patient, but it was a standard which is normally provided with the commercial kit. For if you buy a commercial kit, you have primers, probes, polymerase, all these constituents of the PCR, and then you also have a positive control because you need to run a positive control to see if everything is okay and the run was correct. And they contaminated their premises, the pre-analytics with the control, with the standard, and the standard. This is really. It's diabolical because the standard, it's great by diabolical. The standard contains all, it's like concatemeric construct with head to tail sequencing containing recognition sites for all the primers and probes from the Drosten design. So even if it crossed your mind that you contaminated your laboratory with the standard, there is no way to switch to another producer, to another commercial kit, because all the kits, irrespective of the producer, they're based on the same design. So if you contaminated your laboratory with a commercially available kit with the standard, which has to be in the kit because it's a normal constituent of the kit, you just ended, and it's impossible to clean your lab. So it's so complicated to clean your lab because you do not know if it's in pipettes, in solutions, or where it is. So this is a real trouble of all PCR laboratories. And many labs which started with the SARS-CoV-2 diagnostics didn't have any experience at all with the PCR diagnostics. It was easy for them to contaminate, then to produce falsely positive because they read it out CT values of 42, and it was just falsely positive because of the unlucky Drosten design.
Yeah, this is precisely what happened everywhere, not just in the Czech Republic. Dr. Mike Yeadon told us about how they did it in the UK. They set up test centers, and most of them were completely contaminated because the people who did the work had no prior experience. Many of them, for example, he was explaining about former disc jockeys who all of a sudden worked at a test center. This is a major problem that many people have overlooked. Your colleague, Professor Ulrike Kemmerer, explained to us in great detail about this major problem of contamination. In fact, we have connected you with her because I think it's important that you two talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Can I ask you, all these tests, they run on the Roche light cycler?
No. We use my preferred platform is RotorGene, by QIAGEN, is a German company. And I like RotorGen because it is an open platform and you do not need to use, a patented fluorophores. It's totally open platform. So you can, and I am the designer of the assays. So all the time I design something for some agent, I need totally open platform. So this is why I have been working for years with RotorGen Q.
But this is what you do. But the other ones who use the commercial kits, they would have likely used the wash machine.
Different ones. So someone uses Roche light cycle, or someone uses RotorGen or by Bio-Rad. So laboratories are equipped with the most various PCR okay. cyclers. So this was not like the thing of the cycler. This was the whole trouble was not the thing of the cycler, use the machinery, but the whole trouble was the use of the kit, of the diagnostic kit.
Right.
So can we go to the next slide? And can you, Yes. And could you wait for Dr. Fulmich? Because this is quite important, I guess.
Yeah, he's going to be back in a second.
Okay.
And how many cases did you have in the Czech Republic at all?
So I will comment on that in this, using this this slide. At the very beginning, in March 2020, just few, and it was only hype by the media and all the flashlights and journalists everywhere talking about the pandemics and so on, but we didn't see so many positive individuals. Plus we have I think two or three deaths, and it was all each time it was someone who was morbidly obese, with diabetes, very, very ill, and only three deaths. And if it was not like this media homebook, no one would know that there is something like the first way. So thank you for coming, because we waited for you, because I think this is quite interesting. This guy in this picture is a gray shadow puppeteer of all the pandemic situation in our country. His name is...
He looks the part too. You can't trust him.
His name is Professor Roman Primula. And this is an extract from a TV interview which was held on June 20th, 2020. And it says, let me read it. The second wave of COVID-19 infections is likely to come. The crucial thing is whether we will be able to maintain a daily increase in the number of infected in the hundreds or even worse. Roman Primula, the government representative for health research, at some point he was also the minister on health. So he is really the puppeteer behind the scene. So Roman Primula said, this in an interview with Czech Television 24. The experience of Israel shows that the onset of the second wave can be very rapid within 10 days. It is therefore important that everything created in order to bind the original March wave remains on standby. And now look at the left part of the slide. So here, from the Worldometers info, you can see the picture of the waves in the Czech Republic, and below is in Israel. And I use the blue arrowhead, and the blue arrowhead points at exactly or approximately the day when Roman Primula said, meaning June 20, 2020, and you see, so the blue arrowhead points to that point when he was saying this on the main Czech state media, Czech television. But on June 20th, almost zero SARS-CoV. So we couldn't see almost anything. So it was really rare to see a positive case. And the minuscule hillock at the beginning in March. So this was the first March wave in the Czech Republic. If you go down at the same scale, so you can see in Israel, there was almost nothing. And if Professor Primula says on June 20, 2020, that The second wave is expected and highly probably it will happen. And at that time, no laboratory data implicated anything of that sort. It was really calm. The first wave of March was calm. It was just a homework by media. So I don't know.
He was following a script, basically.
He was following. You should take a closer look into his biography. Who knows? Is he really a professor? Is he really a person?
He is. The professor is a real person, but he all the time when you have some weird things going on, issues going on in government, all the time he is a part of that. Mm-hmm. So he had so many conflicts of interest and many issues, financial and blah, blah, blah. So, but I'm not here to criticize his person, but I'm here to tell you that Professor Primula was probably a fortune teller because he was able to tell during a totally calm period of time that second wave will come and it will be sharp, rapid, and immediate. And it really happened. So he's like, I have it for a fortune teller and for the best epidemiologist in the world because he could predict something which no one could. And when the second wave started, it was September 2020. It was really abrupt. It started like from nothing, wow, it skyrocketed. And using next generation sequencing, the red wave was genomically characterized and it was done at the Institute of Health, Institute of Czech Health or whatever it is, the name, the official name of the authority. They sequenced the wave and found out that it's not the Wuhan virus. It is similar to the Wuhan virus, but it's genomically different. It carries many different mutations, and then the wave, rectangle was dubbed the Czech or Prague or Czech strain, and it was totally different at the genomic level from the, not totally, but really conspicuously different from the Wuhan original strain. And then we took the markers of this red wave, this Czech-Prague strain, and did a follow-up. And I said we investigated almost 30,000 samples. So we genotyped all our positive cases. Really, everything. So here in the right side of the picture, the green entries are the remnants from the Wuhan positivities. Then the red wave started. You can see, so it's from our Excel table. So from at the top of it are the oldest samples, and at the bottom are the newest samples. So it perfectly corresponds to the individual waves. So yeah, the green is the original Wuhan. Some rare instances we were able to identify during the summer. Then the red wave came, and we genotyped and tracked the virus spreading in our country using the specific genomic markers of the red wave. And suddenly we started seeing patients from intensive, and the red wave was rather benign, just runny nose and some chills and nothing so special clinically. But then we started to see again patients from intensive care units, from faculty hospitals here in Prague, and we found out that the genotype was again different, and we markered or we highlighted them by blue, and the blue wave here in the worldometer graph, the blue wave was again genomically different. And then so you see the green, the red, and then starts to some blue, still red. And then our colleagues in London finally sequenced this strain, dubbed it Britain strain or British strain. So please, next one.
I think we're finally looking at the right picture, right? Because we were looking at the old one.
So in this picture, you are just looking at, we see the red wave, then started different one, and we genotyped using the markers from the red wave, and we lost those markers and found new ones. And it was we highlighted that wave in blue, and this blue wave had completely different genotype. Next slide, please. And then our colleagues in London finally sequenced what started in London in the UK and dubbed it the Britain strain. Now it's called Alpha, and it started rolling out through our country, and we stopped seeing the red wave, stopped seeing the blue wave, and saw only the yellow wave. And we sequenced and genotyped all our positive cases, and then we selected from each individual group, from the red one, blue one, and the yellow wave, one representative. And next slide, please. And this looks like busy, but it's not. And this, so the table, the color table shows. It's like the genome of the SARS-CoV-2 sequenced by next generation sequencing, meaning that you read the whole genome from the 5' end to the 3' end, from the beginning to the end, and you can see all the amino acid substitution found. And if it was found, there is a X, like cross. I marked it by cross. And in the second line, you can see three consecutive crosses. Can you see it in the red line? Second row. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the red is one representative of the red wave. The blue is one representative of the blue wave. And the yellow is one representative of the yellow, the British, the alpha strain. And you can perfectly see that there are three red crosses in the second row disappeared in the blue strain and disappeared also in the yellow strain, which is impossible. Because if you have a confined population, which definitely was our country at that time, because the country was under lockdown, mandatory facial masks, social distancing, almost no traveling. So this was like an island. So this was a really confined population. And if you have a confined population, then there you have in genetics something which is called genetic law of confined populations. And the situation here totally violated the genetic law, because it showed the genetic data of the individual waves clearly show that this subsequent wave was not the offspring of the previous one, mm-hmm. which is not possible. So if you have confined population like a island or closed Czech Republic, then if it starts with one strain, the next wave must carry all the mutation of the original strain and might only add some more mutations. So this is like you inherited all your mutations from your parents and you might only add more. You are not able to erase your mutations because you do not have what the blueprint was. Yeah. And also this Czech strain or the blue strain or the yellow strain did not know what the original Wuhan sequence was. So it's not possible that a wave which comes after another, like erases the mutations of the previous one. This is not possible. This totally violates the genetics of, like, evolution, violates the law of evolution of mutations in a place. So this means, in other words, that all the individual waves, meaning the red one, the blue one, and the yellow one, were totally different from each other genomically, and we are not directly interrelated. We are not, the second was not offspring of the first, and the third was not the offspring of the second. So there is not direct interrelation between the individual strains. So the question which comes is, what is or was the actual source of the individual SARS-CoV-2 strains? And back to the announcement of Professor Primula at the Czech television when he announced, like, many, many weeks ahead that something like this happens. And now you see that each individual wave is a different strain. And now no one is, everyone speaks freely about it because they say we have Delta, we have Omicron, they give them names. So when I announced in autumn 2020 that each individual wave is something different, I got scientific enterprise in our country. And they just went after me, chased me like a witch. So this was really interesting. And now the narrative changed because probably the creators of the whole COVID-19 pandemics didn't count on the fact that the laboratories will have next generation sequencing technology at routine disposal at the time when they launch the pandemics. So without NGS, you would not be able to discern if it's British wave or Omicron or Delta. It would be all the time just SARS-CoV-2 positivity. But because we have sequenced the whole genomes, we are able to tell that the individual waves are different. So they are, of course, related to the original SARS-CoV-2 from Wuhan, but they are not directly interrelated to each other because, as I said, the subsequent wave all the time should carry all the mutations from the parent virus, and this was not the case. So my question still is, what the actual source of the ideal SARS-CoV-2 strains? And the Omicron is so mutated that direct predecessor of Omicron was not found yet. They tried to pinpoint some golden hamster or whatever, but it's not. So all the individual strains are totally uninterdependent. They are genomically distinctive and unique.
Okay.
And could it be that they are related? I mean, the Omicron spike protein, could that be related to some, you know, the self-produced spikes after vaccination?
I don't know. They say that probably some highly immunodeficient patients might be the source of these strains. I'm not refuting this idea, but definitely it was not in the autumn 2020 because at that time the vaccinations just started. Mm-hmm. And basically, so vaccination is on the way right now, or maybe it will stop because it's pointless and people see that it was just a bag of lies and nothing more. But in autumn 2020, the vaccination just started, and definitely this fact could not interfere with the emergence of new, unusual, and not interrelated strains.
So you think that the other side, those who are responsible for all this, did not expect you and anyone else to do this next generation sequencing?
Exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. Because if the pandemics, I'll call it pandemics, so if it started like 5 or 6 years earlier, we would not have this technology at disposal. Mm-hmm. So if they designed it, I don't know how many years before, as Johnny said, many, many decades before. So it never crossed their minds that such technological improvement would be available as we have right now, NGS. And without NGS, you would not be able to tell that the individual waves are different strains. So my suspicion is that it started in a lab, in one petri dish, so to speak, and then they just aliquoted the different strains and put it in the freezer for further usage. And the further usage came 3 times during the autumn 2020 in our country. And then Omicron appeared just like bolt from the blue. No one knows from what place because it doesn't have any predecessor. It's so totally different that no one knows where the source was.
Do you think it has nothing to do with the original SARS-CoV-2 virus?
Yes. It's a derivative of the original SARS-CoV-2 from Wuhan, but it's so highly mutated that it's basically, so in terms of virology, it's not like variant or mutant. It's totally different strain, because not only it carries so many mutations, but also it behaves clinically differently. So once it behaves clinically differently, you can call it different strain. So, and each of the waves behaved clinically differently, more or less. Mm-hmm. And Omicron, for example, right now I'm 3 days after huge Omicron positivity and I'm here breathing normally. I just had runny nose and it was also nothing really to speak about. So Omicron is benign. I'm not telling, but I'm not vaccinated. So I have a normal immune system. Mm-hmm. But what we see that people who underwent vaccination, even the booster shot, like second or third jab, they might really suffer from Omicron badly, and they might end up in the hospital because their immune system is damaged by the vaccination. But
that's what we hear. Have you, what with respect to new generation sequencing NGS, what is Sanger sequencing?
Sanger sequencing is used for example, we use it in genetics when we need to sequence only specific parts of a gene, because mm-hmm. it's labor consuming and it has low throughput. And you can sequence only a few fragments, because otherwise you would pipe it yourself to death.
So if you really want to know what's going on, you have to use new generation sequencing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to have to put you in touch with Dr. Sinhang Lee from the United States, because he also, right from the start, he kept saying you have to sequence the positive tests in order to find out what's really going on. Of course, in order to understand why someone has symptoms, you also have to do differential diagnostics. But he kept talking about Sanger sequencing. Maybe we should tell him there's something better than that, new generation sequencing.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sanger, we have Sanger sequencing in our lab too, but it's too labor consuming and not mm-hmm. useful for this. But it has another angle. There's another angle to this story. So once you know that each individual wave is different virus, then you can't, you must not use vaccine which has been designed against the original Wuhan virus.
Obviously, well, yes.
Yeah, because otherwise you hugely risk the antibody-dependent enhancement in the vaccinated population. And this is perfectly new. It's a textbook knowledge. And when I started talking about this, that all each individual wave is different, and I spoke about it publicly in our country, I showed the data. So all these experts, so-called experts, which pretend they have whatever knowledge in the immunology, vaccinology, and so on, should have this textbook knowledge that if you are not allowed to vaccinate individuals with heterological vaccine, because otherwise you might really damage your immune system, which is what's going on right now. So I blame them. I really blame them for 1,000 things, but I also blame them that they did it on purpose. They knew that if you have different strain, you are not allowed to use heterological vaccine, and still then they mandated, they push the vaccine, and they still do. The so-called experts in this country. Terrible, really terrible. And so this is what we as the parallel medical chamber try to explain to doctors, people, what all the risk and all the traps are here. And many people just have their eyes opened, and they understand what's going on. But still, there is the official narrative from the government telling this bullshit, excuse me for the word, but it's really bullshit, and bullshitting people with this and mandating vaccines and telling, go for the booster, third shot, and this will be the full stop. And you might travel freely, and you might go to the restaurant and whatever. And people are real gullible and stupid enough to buy these stories. So, but back to this. So this is about medicine. So once you know that you have heterological anti-vaccine, you can't use it. You can't. So it was found in 1964 for the first time for dengue fever, that they produced antibody against. So dengue fever virus has four strains, and they produced vaccine against strain number one. And they vaccinated people with this vaccine. And once they got ill with strain number two, three, or four, they died from the adverse effects from the antibody-dependent enhancement. So
this is precisely what all the experts told us would happen, and that's what's happening now.
Yeah. And you have the laboratory correlate. You have the data. And I don't know, not in our country, but in some American countries. So if you have a suspect and on the underpants, you find a blood stain or a sperm stain, and you isolate DNA from that and sequence the DNA. And then you can say it's John Smith, and John Smith will be executed for that because it's clearly connected with the, so once you have the genome, once you have the sequence, this is the ultimate proof of genetic identity. There is no, we can't go lower. So this is the absolute proof. So once you have genetic data, so this is the most bulletproof data you might even have. And all the data we produced, I made public. I offered to the government, to our official institutions. They said thank you, and that was all. I only blame them for all the damage which was done on our people and will be done because of the later effects of the vaccines.
Sonia, you have so much more to tell, but we don't have that much time. Allow me a couple of questions, and I'm pretty sure Viviana has a couple of questions as well. How many members do you have in this new parallel medical chamber?
Maybe I know. So people are continually. Like we are adding new people, but maybe like 100, something like that. Because still many doctors are indoctrinated. I can't call it different.
Yeah.
Indoctrinated totally, and they need to see the patients after vaccination, after the jab, returning to them, to their department, and showing with weird, unusual clinical signs which are not present before. So they need to see it with their own eyes, because people and doctors, so there is a established structure in each country, and people have the tendency to trust the government and trust the legal representatives. Mm-hmm. And now you get some information or some orders which are totally weird, illogical, and even damaging people. And for some individuals, it takes time just for the panic to drop.
This is the same thing. If you're stuck in a certain structure, and you have been stuck in this structure, governmental structure, societal structure, for decades, like our friend Michael Swinwood, he's an attorney from Canada, he's 73 or 74 years old. He says, it is only now that I'm beginning to see that I've been lied to for 74 years.
Yeah, exactly,
so if you're stuck, what you're doing, the kind of work that you're doing, will give you all the authority that you need, because it already now, it shows, I mean, if even I can understand this, already now it shows that you are right and they're wrong. Already now, now it is quite obvious that they're killing people by using the wrong treatment, by using vaccinations that you cannot and must not use against these heterological strains, as you explained to us.
Absolutely, and even if you try to suppress the overwhelming knowledge which came originally from the in silico predictions, what the S protein might do, what the vaccines might do, if you even try to like hide yourself in front of all this information, here you have the genetic data which shows that each wave is a different virus, meaning you are not allowed to use the same vaccine for each individual virus. It's just as simple as it is. Mm-hmm. It's an old textbook knowledge they completely ignore.
This is extremely important. That's why I connected you, or Corvin did this on my behalf, with Ulrike, Professor Kammerer. We will definitely need you in the trials, in the ongoing trials, the ones that are in that have been filed in the existing system, because that's what I think this whole thing boils down to. This is a staged pandemic, and their major tool was the PCR test. So we're going to need you for that. We're going to need you for many of these cases, I'm afraid.
I'll be happy to, because really it's such an eyesore. I don't know why they feel that people are so stupid. So many of them are, but not everyone is.
Yeah.
And they treat us like a cattle, or I don't know.
Yeah, wasn't it Abraham Lincoln who said you can fool all the people for a while, and you can fool some people forever, but you can't fool everyone forever.
yeah, that's true.
Okay. Well, Sonia, I know we're going to be in touch, because I think we're really going to need you and your expertise. That's why I connected you with Ulrika, but also with Dr. Sinhang Lee from the United States. Because it's only a small group of biologists who really understand about the PCR test, and even fewer who can explain about the PCR test in such a way that even a judge will understand it. So yeah. I at this point, unless there's something that definitely needs to be mentioned, I would like to switch over to our next guest, but I don't want to cut you off. So if there's anything that we should still talk about, let's do it.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to show you what's behind the horizon, possibly, but maybe your spare time, if you have any, you can just skip along the slides and see it. So
what's behind the horizon is important for us to know. I mean, if you could maybe just like say it briefly, or just the result, okay. And then we can maybe talk about this in detail in a different...
I just wanted, so there are some papers showing that, for example, there is one in from Nature showing that you might construct a viable SARS-CoV-2 or Zika virus or whatever flavivirus particles just within 1 week, and it came out in Nature. The paper is called Rapid Reconstruction of SARS-CoV-2 Using a Synthetic Genomic Platform. And synthetic genomics is something we, for example, routinely use also in our lab. When I am designing new assay for a new agent, for a new pathogen, I'm not just digging in the ground looking for the pathogen. I'm so insolent that I just ask a oligo house to synthesize the genome for me, and they synthesize whatever you want to. So and in this article, they say that they were able to produce SARS-CoV-2 vital particle just within a week after receiving the nucleotides from the oligo house. So this is so in molecular biology, you have so many opportunities to misuse the science and misuse the field. And basically the law, at least the law, is lagging behind so much.
Obviously.
And the field is just running ahead. And as I thought in March 2020, it's just an inadvertent leak from the lab. But now, definitely, it's not inadvertent. It's just on purpose. It looked like on purpose. But you can't exclude any other possibility that someone will produce something in the lab, because I'm so skilled in laboratory in the lab, because I have been in the lab for my last 20 years. But I would not be able to tell if I came into someone's lab and looked into the incubator what is growing in what cultivation flask. And it's only on the consciousness of the scientist if he or she produces something which is dangerous or overwhelming the world, like SARS-CoV-2. So the legislation, the law behind, the law which covers this is like from the Bronze Age, really. And this should be definitely improved, because it might happen at any time. And you have also societies like it's called Do It Yourself. It started in 2008, and it was scientists from NASA who started a Do It Yourself company. And you can buy via internet the simple chemicals and simple machines for your kitchen-like molecular biology lab, and you can produce genetically modified organisms just using that pre-made, user-friendly, stupidity-friendly kit. And you can do it at your home easily. And then you have like CRISPR, And the ladies who got a Nobel Prize for CRISPR, they said, please do not use it just freely because the tool is so powerful. And what happened in 2019, there was a CRISPR baby scandal from China because they produced two embryos CRISPR modified. And they reported it somewhere, probably because they had to, because normally the scientists would not tell it openly, because this particular scientist was fined and ended up in a jail for it. But he did it, and the tools are available. Everything is perfectly available on the internet. No, and then you have something like artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is something which helps enormously in molecular biology, because it helps us to predict the best sequences for the best recognition of something. So, for example, if I tried to design a really powerful 5' UTR with a really powerful promoter, I would use artificial intelligence for many, many different designs. Then I would just test it in the lab, because we have high throughput testing technologies. But the artificial intelligence would help me enormously to find the best design, and not during 30 years of experimenting, but within 10 minutes. So I think that
we can see a lot of bad things on the horizon if we don't get things under control. And this is what we're going to do. This is what we're working on right now. I hate to cut you off, but we can't keep Anna Garner waiting for much longer. So I thank you very much. And please get in touch with Ulrika. We sent you her email address. Also, Dr. Sinhang Lee's email address. I think it's going to be worth your while, because it's important for all the really smart people who have this expertise in this particular field to connect. That is powerful knowledge combined.
Yeah, I'll be absolutely happy to help you with everything. We'll come into contact. We'll reach out to those colleagues. And thank you very much for having me. And I could explain to you what we found here. And it was so censored that it was not possible. It was not possible to tell people about that.
Things are changing, Sonia. Things are changing. And thanks to your help as well. Thank you very much. We'll be in touch. Because we have to be in touch, because we have to attack these people. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yep,
bye-bye.